I'm Lauren Mathias, and this is Hidden True Crime, where we bring you the latest info on true crime and delve into the hidden motives with my co-host, criminal psychologist, Dr. John Mathias. And in recent weeks, there has been some big updates in a case we have been following from the very beginning, the Jared Bridegan, Shanna Gardner case, also known as the Stampin' Up! Case here at Hidden True Crime, where you can listen to our full case playlist. We call it the Stampin' Up! Case because the founders of the crafting company Stampin' Up!, well, they are funding the murder trials defense. More on that a little bit later. But if you are unfamiliar with this shocking and heartbreaking saga, for a brief background, on February 16th, 2022, so exactly 3 years ago today at the time of this recording, 33-year-old Microsoft executive and a doting father of four, Jared Bridegan, was murdered in Jacksonville, Florida. It happened on his way home from dropping his 10-year-old twins off with their mother, Shanna Gardner. So Jared had just spent the evening with the twins, his son and daughter, that he shared with his ex-wife, Shanna. The evening was also known as date night to the twins, and they looked forward to this midweek visit with their dad. And sometimes their two younger half-sisters would come along. Jared, you see, had found love again and remarried Kirsten Bridegan after his divorce from Shanna. And the twins, after that marriage, became big siblings to half-sisters London and Bexley. So Jared was driving home on his regular route with two-year-old Bexley in the backseat. After dropping the twins off with their mom and their new stepdad, Mario Fernandez Saldana, it was then that Jared noticed a tire in the middle of the road on a dimly lit one-way street. Again, this was his regular route home. So he stopped his car to move the tire. He placed one foot outside of his vehicle and was immediately gunned down as his toddler watched from her car seat in the back seat. The investigation into his murder began immediately, and fingers quickly began pointing at Shanna due to their extremely volatile custody battle over the twins, which had continued to last years after their divorce. Shanna denied any involvement in Jared's death. She even interviewed with a local news station saying, "I would never, ever do this. I have no involvement."
I was shocked. I fell to the floor because I was devastated for what I was going to have to tell my kids.
Jared died in that street, leaving behind four children and a heartbroken family.
They were, I think, in shock.
Later, in a blog post, Shanna's mother said she was not invited to the funeral. I asked Shanna about the situation.
His family did not invite me or want me there.
But the day before a vigil hosted by Jared's widow at Celebration Park, Shanna was photographed at the park with her kids by the tabloid Daily Mail.
Talk about a violation of privacy, because my kids know that they were photographed, and they were worried.
The tabloid presented the facts in a way that leave room for speculation about Shanna having a role in Jared's death, citing their rocky divorce papers and her absence from the funeral.
Even though we didn't always get along, he was still the father of my kids.
So I asked Shanna the question.
Did you have anything to do with Jared's murder?
No, I did not have anything to do with his murder.
Well, nearly a year after the murder, in January of 2023, a man named Henry Tenen was arrested and charged with pulling the trigger and killing Jared Bridegan. But police say that Henry was only the hitman. And it turns out that hitman Henry Tenen was a previous rental tenant of a property owned by Shanna's new husband, Mario Fernandez, that new stepdad to the twins. Henry quickly took a plea deal and gave information on the crime, which police say led to the arrest of Mario 2 months after Henry's arrest in March of 2023, just a year after Jared's murder. So now we have two arrests, Henry Tenen and Mario. And after Mario's arrest, Shanna uprooted her twins and left the state of Florida, moved across the country to Washington State and into a large home her wealthy parents purchased for her. But despite that 2,000-mile move, 5 months after Mario's arrest in August of 2023, police made a third arrest. Shanna was also arrested, accused of being the mastermind along with Mario behind the brutal murder of her ex-husband and father to her two children. Both Shanna and Mario have been behind bars ever since, in jail, awaiting trial. Well, Shanna's wealthy LDS or Mormon parents from Utah own a well-known multi-level crafting company called Stampin' Up! And are now guardians of the twins living in Shanna's Washington house, or at least her mother does. And they are funding her multi-million dollar defense, hiring the famous or infamous, depending on how you look at it, the famous defense attorney, Jose Baez, to defend their youngest daughter, Shanna. Jose also defended Casey Anthony and Harvey Weinstein. And those aren't the only famous people he has defended, but he's one of the most costly defense attorneys in the country. It has been a wild ride ever since Jose has been at the helm defending Shanna. Mario, now known as Shanna's estranged husband, has his own defense team, since Stampin' Up! Isn't going to defend Mario's defense. Jose Baez likely needs to point the fingers at Mario to help his client Shanna. So Mario's on his own. But, well, the last few weeks, as the trial for Shanna and Mario approaches, we have begun to learn even more, beginning with Henry Tenen, the man who admitted to being the hitman and pulling the trigger, that man who was the first one arrested. Earlier this month, Mario's defense attorney filed a motion requesting specific discovery in this case, specific evidence in the murder of Jared. In this motion, the attorney explains that in a recent hearing, Henry Tenen admitted to giving false testimony. So that's shocking, that the hitman, the man who took a plea deal, the man who allegedly is the reason why Mario was arrested, now we're hearing that he may have given false testimony. So to understand exactly what they're talking about here in this motion, we need to go back to 2023. That's the year of the arrest. So according to records, on March 15th, 2023, that was after Henry Tenen was arrested and just one day before Mario was arrested, Henry provided a sworn statement to law enforcement implicating Mario in Jared's murder. It was that testimony by Henry Tenen that allegedly led to that arrest of Mario the very next day. Well, now let's fast forward nearly 3 years later to 2025, to this year, to earlier this month on February 4th, 2025. And the state sent Mario's defense a link that allegedly had additional evidence. And within that link was a transcript of a January 13th, 2025 status hearing. So just a couple of months ago, a transcript from a hearing a couple of months ago. So I am going to read to you that transcript of that hearing so that you're going to understand what was said. It starts with Attorney Chipperfield, and this is what Attorney Chipperfield says. Quote, "Good morning, Your Honor. Alan Chipperfield for Mr. Tenen. Your Honor, I think we just need a pass date," end quote. Judge, quote, "I was just checking in because I hadn't seen Mr. Tenen since last year. I was just making sure everything was okay," end quote. Attorney Chipperfield, "I think he's doing okay." Judge, quote, "Okay." Henry Tenen now. Henry Tenen, quote, "Your Honor, may I say something?" End quote. Judge, quote, "Talk to Mr. Chipperfield first. Tell him what you want to tell me, okay?" End quote. Henry Tenen, quote, "I just want to bring to your attention that my testimony, dot, dot, dot," end quote. Don't know what that sentence was going to become. Judge, quote, "No, no, no," end quote. Henry Tenen, quote, "False testimony," end quote. Judge, quote, "Hold on," end quote. Attorney Chipperfield, quote, "Mr. Tenen, we need to talk about that." Henry Tenen, quote, "I need another attorney," end quote. Judge, quote, "Okay, let me pass it temporarily. Have a conversation with Mr. Chipperfield, and then I'll have a conversation with you, Mr. Tenen. Okay," end quote. According to that transcript, Henry left the courtroom at that point and didn't end up returning. When his attorney came back in, they moved the hearing date to another week until January 22nd, and then that was switched to April 14th. So we're between now that hearing and the April 14th hearing. So at this point, we do not know exactly what part of the testimony Henry Tenen is claiming as false. All we got out of that hearing was, quote, "false testimony," end quote. And that he needs another attorney. So were there other parts of his testimony that didn't include Mario that may be false that Henry Tennant is referring to? Or is he claiming that what he said about Mario to be false? It is essentially a waiting game. We don't understand what is meant by false testimony, and only time will tell. But Mario's attorney is requesting the following evidence. Now, as they say, they cannot present a proper defense for Mario without one, any information or correspondence, conversation, summaries, notes, sidebar conversations, emails with Mr. Tennant's counsel, the court's judicial assistant, the clerk's office, and or the court that provides information as to why Mr. Tennant was not brought back out to the courtroom after the court temporarily passed his case to allow him to speak with counsel, this again on January 13th of this year, 2025. Number two, any information, correspondence, conversation, summaries, notes, sidebar conversations, emails with Mr. Tennant's counsel, the court's judicial assistant, the clerk's office, and or the court that provides information as to why Mr. Tennant's court date was reset from January 22nd, 2025 to April 14th, 2025. Number three, any and all actions taken by the state attorney's office to inquire as to what testimony Mr. Tennant has given that is, quote, false testimony, end quote. Additionally, all notes, logs, and records of any meetings between the state's attorney's office and any law enforcement agency regarding information directly or indirectly provided as to the statements made by Mr. Tennant in court on January 13th, 2025. This request includes any and all information regarding the context of the false testimony, including Mr. Tennant's current state of mind and participation as a state witness. Number four, seeking information regarding what steps the state has taken to void his plea agreement, or in the alternative, learn why his plea agreement should not be rescinded. In this alternative, we are seeking any correspondence, conversation, summaries, or any information regarding statements the state has made to the defense or Mr. Tennant regarding how the state will proceed if Mr. Tennant does not rescind or recant his statements made in court on January 13th, 2025. We do know that the judge has ordered Mario's jail calls to be released to the defense. I love jailhouse calls. I'll be the first to admit it. And we know that the judge now has ordered Mario's jailhouse calls to be released to the defense. So we might find out more from those jailhouse calls very soon. If they are released, Hidden True Crime will be on it, bringing them to you. And if this information about an alleged false testimony isn't a bombshell enough, because it definitely has me on pins and needles, it seems that so much of his case is weighing on Henry the Hitman's testimony. But now let's move on to this month. We are now hearing about Shanna, the stamping up heiress, and what she's been up to while behind bars, while in jail. And let's just say she has not been staying out of trouble since her arrest. The first incident was nearly a year ago on April 29th, 2024, when there was a shakedown of her cell. While the jail staff was searching her cell, which is a normal procedure in jail, they check for contraband or anything that the inmate shouldn't have, and that's what they were doing with Shanna Gardner. There was a shakedown of her cell. And while jail staff was searching her cell, they found three things to note. Number one, a cup of cheeked medication, meaning that she wasn't taking the medication prescribed to her. I don't know what that is, but she was saving it. I picture a chipmunk cheeking the medication. Number two, they also found an extra mattress. And number three, a fishing line. So the extra mattress and then the fishing line, this is what inmates often use to pass things from cell to cell that they shouldn't have. And these two things were found under her bunk bed. A month and a half later, in mid-June, First Coast News, the local news station in Florida, states, quote, a discipline report states a violation of possession of any other contraband and introduction of any other contraband, end quote, though no plea, finding, or narrative is provided within this report. 2 days later, just 2 days, the Stampin' Up! Heiress, Shanna Gardner, was busted for stealing. This time, there were multiple things listed on the discipline report, including, number one, theft of property exceeding $50 in value. Number two, lying to staff members or others in official capacity or falsifying records. Number three, attempt to manipulate staff. Number four, disorderly conduct. Number five, I think number five, I've lost count. There's so many here. We've got bullet points. Number five, disobeying verbal or written order. Apparently, she had stolen items from another inmate and they were found under her bunk bed. That's bold. Think about it. Stealing from another inmate. What's one financial lesson you learned the hard way? I'll go first. It's not too late to start saving. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you have right now. And one of the best things about Acorns is they allow you to see projected growth on their website. Simply go online, type in how much money you'd put in, and see the potential future balance of your account. Sign up now and join the over 13 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/hiddentruecrime or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/hiddentruecrime. As a busy working mom, it is hard to find time to shop or find that right outfit for that certain event. That's where Armoire comes in. I choose clothes to rent. They come right to my doorstep from my phone, and I get to try all of these new clothes regularly, figuring out what I like and don't like, all without those awful dressing room mirrors. And when I am ready to swap my clothes out for different styles, Armoire can do my laundry. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you build the perfect wardrobe with high-quality brands recommended just for you. All you need to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. And then when you're ready, swap them out for more new-to-you styles. Right now, our Hidden Gems can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/hiddentruecrime. That's Armoire, Armoire.style/hiddentruecrime to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
After getting caught, she had, quote, nothing to say, end quote, and, quote, only questions about the waiver, end quote. So, and then last month, let's go to last month now. There were two reports from the same day when there was another shakedown of Shanna Gardner's cell. So at this point, I'm thinking, okay, she's learning lessons, right? But here we go. Another shakedown. Number one, her armband, which seems to be her identification, was not on her and was on her bunk bed. Number two, corrections officers found what they believed to be a makeshift tattoo gun in her cell. This was made by a pencil with a sharp object tied to the eraser and with thread. It probably won't come as any shock that Shanna didn't exactly take responsibility for what was found in her cell. Instead, she blamed others, saying that this was a setup. She does seem to have a history or a thing for blaming others, but Shanna says she was set up and framed. Shanna's punishment for what was found in her cell, losing her commissary privileges. That's a big deal behind bars. Aside from the disciplinary infractions, apparently Shanna is also now involved with a new lover in jail. Mario really is on the outs. Estranged husband, he definitely is, according to this information. The St. John's Citizen just released an article, and in this article, they talk about a letter that Shanna sent her sister Sage last April and from jail. This letter states, quote, I see so much good in him, end quote, followed by, quote, he is a damaged soul. You know me and my broken things, end quote. According to the Citizen, Shanna was referring to her new jail lover by his preferred pronouns, indicating that her alleged lover may not have been born a male, which would make it make a bit more sense for me if they are behind bars together, as the article claims, because males and females are kept separated from each other behind bars. So that helps sort of clarify why they might be behind bars together. Shanna continued in this letter talking about this person saying, quote, "I could be very good for him, but it's like a Mario situation. He would have to be willing to work hard to heal himself, not want me to fix him," end quote. In another letter to a friend, Shanna wrote, quote, "Marriage is really hard, like really hard. I should know, with two failed marriages," end quote. Again, sounds like Mario's definitely on the outs now that he's considered a failed marriage. Dr. John has talked a lot about Shanna and her past relationships in our previous episodes, and I'm going to link those in the description of this podcast episode. We even dig deep into Jared Bridegan and Shanna Gardner's marriage and relationship, and we have all of their divorce records on patreon.com/hiddentruecrime. There's a lot. But I'm going to ask John, I'm going to pull him on here really quickly, to ask him just a few more questions as it pertains to this case and these recent updates, because I have questions and we need some Dr. John. Thank you for joining me, Dr. John Mathias. For those that are new to Hidden True Crime, he's also my husband. But I have some questions for a criminal psychologist, so thank you for being here. Shanna Gardner is getting into trouble again and again and again.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. What's that about? Why isn't she learning her lesson?
One of the things that a forensic psychologist would look at is whether behavior is invariant, meaning we want to know whether something's situational or whether it's more of a pervasive pattern of behavior. So in other words, when crimes are committed, you know, the situation or the context will have an influence on the particular crime, but so will personality. And so one of the tasks of a forensic psychologist is to try to sort out how much of the situation is a causal factor and how much is the personality. And so if it's more personality, then the risks for reoffense are going to be higher because you don't change personality. So you can change the situation. So let's say that a criminal is involved in an unusual situation. Let's say that a group of peers, maybe like an 18-year-old that's jumped into a gang, is with peers that are threatening to harm him if he doesn't participate in a crime, right? Then, and he does. Mm-hmm. So you could argue that if that person is not in the gang and is not being influenced by his peers, then he may not commit that crime. So if you take away that environment and you take away the peers, you don't get a crime. However, if that person that's jumped in the gang happens to have a long history of criminality and has antisocial personality traits or qualities, or might even be a psychopath, that person is more apt to not only want to join the gang, but to lead the gang and to kind of lead the crew in committing crimes, right? Because it's more of a personality issue. So in the one case, we would say risk might be low if we can change the situation, but it would be high in the second case because personality doesn't change, it's invariant. So if you want to look at a criminal's risk for recidivism, or if you want to understand who they are, you really have to kind of tease out the difference between the situation and personality. And so if you have somebody like Shanna Gardner, who's essentially displaying these oppositional traits, both in prison and outside of prison, then you start considering the fact that there's something going on here with their personality. There's something deeper. So I think part of this is because ultimately somebody like Shanna Gardner, who's got the best defense attorneys possible.
Yes.
She's got everything going for her. This is someone who you'd expect who, if she wants to get acquitted, that she should be completely straight-laced in prison. Absolutely. She should be the model prisoner. She should walk into court and say, this isn't me, right? For the jury, she should want to present this image of herself as pristine.
We've even heard that Lori Vallow's a model prisoner. You know, we've heard that she's well-behaved.
Right.
If Lori Vallow can do it, you'd think Shannon Gardner would be able to, as you point out. Yeah.
But she can't. She can't, right? And so that's the fascinating thing here is that if this is someone with a lot of character, broadly defined, let's say, you know, a strong moral compass, they're going to be behaving well in prison. She's going to want to come across as the model prisoner so that when she gets in front of a jury, her defense team can say, look, she's got this clean, this pristine record in jail. She's done nothing wrong. Like, our client is, you know, a respectable citizen, right? Like, she would never commit a crime like this. She had nothing to do with this. But now they have this complication where, I mean, I'm not sure the prosecution is going to be able to bring this in. Presumably they might. But assuming the prosecution can get some of this behavior in, now you're starting to, you know, you're painting a picture of someone here who is at the very least oppositional. Mm-hmm. You know, worst case, this is someone who's displaying a lot of antisocial traits, that she's engaging in this pattern of rule breaking and violating norms and, right, pushing the limits, manipulation. And this is in prison, right? So you might argue that some of it is the situation, that prison tends to, you know, criminals go to prison. Well, many criminals go to prison to become better criminals. So, right, like the best criminal school on the planet is prison.
Right. And of course she's not in prison. Right. Shannon Gardner's not even in prison yet. She's in jail and she hasn't even been convicted of a crime yet. But
right.
Which is even more interesting because this is the time, as you point out, that she should be really extra well-behaved, right? Like, I don't know.
And so many of the qualities we talked about early on, we covered this case well over a year ago. You know, I have some of these are some of the qualities that some of her mission companions talked about when she was young.
Oh yeah. Let's hear. Let's
right?
be this reminded
is,
of
these are her, this is straight from her mission companions. We talked to multiple mission companion. So this is going back to when she was like, what, 19, 20?
And to clarify, LDS mission companions, meaning that Shannon Gardner served a LDS or Mormon mission. I think she has since left the church. She did that after her divorce from Jared Bridegain, but she did serve a mission in Spain. Okay, yeah.
So these are some of the qualities that they attributed to her. And this is, she's much older now, right? But I'm not sure much has changed. And so this is an argument for something that has to do with personality.
Yeah. When she was 21, 22, mission companion, AKA roommate, taught about God with each other.
So one of her mission companions, just to kind of frame all this, one of her mission companions said that her entire mission was what they called the Shanna show. Right. So like, it was all her. She was on stage. She was the center of attention. It was the Shanna show. And I thought that was fascinating because that in and of itself speaks volumes about how attention seeking she is and how much she wants the limelight, right? Arguably you could say that there's potentially some narcissistic traits there or qualities. Again, I'm not diagnosing here. I don't know if she would qualify for that diagnosis, but these are adjectives that they used: kooky, nutty, off, mentally ill, unstable, moody, attention-seeking, controlling, entitled, spoiled, manipulative, obsessive, and a compulsive liar. One of her companions told us that she creates her own reality all the time, that she's a compulsive liar. So if you look at those qualities going back to when she was young, and you look at those and you take that, you take that list and you apply it now, or you look to apply it now to what's going on in jail, it's interesting that I think you can see some of those same qualities in play in jail. Yeah. And all of that would speak strongly to the possibility that we're looking at something that's deeper, that has to do with her personality and maybe a personality disorder.
Interesting. She allegedly has a love interest now in jail. This is interesting to me because, well, relationships in jail always interest me, whether that's a pen pal, whether that's some of the visits. And you know, she is married to Mario, who's been arrested and charged in the same murder she's been charged with, an estranged husband. So I think it's interesting that she's already gotten herself in another relationship. I have questions about this. I also find it unique and interesting because it sounds like they are in jail together. It is a male, but it sounds like, according to the citizen, that this man, they referred to Shanna as referring to his pronouns correctly, meaning this might be why they're in jail together, that perhaps this man was born a female, and so there's some pronoun change. That is an interesting dynamic to me, that they would be in jail together. Is this someone that always has to be in a relationship? I mean, what does that mean to have this relationship behind bars?
Well, I heard your quote about that she perceived this person to be a project. And arguably, you could say the same thing with Jared. You know, one of several of the mission companions talked about her relationship with Jared. One of them said that she saw Jared as a pushover that she could run all over. Right. I think the theme here is that she needs to be in control, that she's not going to express any type. There's not going to be any vulnerability in a relationship. In other words, she's in control. When she talks about a project, what she's saying is that she wants to kind of mold the person in such a way that the person can't hurt her or can't control her, right? That the project is taking someone who's, in her mind's eye, taking someone who's potentially vulnerable and kind of molding them in her image.
Mm-hmm.
So that she's in charge, and that she can't get hurt, and the part, right? It's about this issue of control.
Well, she states that to it was either her sister or her friend. I've gotten the letters mixed up, but you know me, like, I love the damage, the broken.
Right.
And right. It's interesting. You refer to Jared as a project, but she referred to Mario as a project. So, you know, okay. Like Mario. So you're saying, well, this, you know me, I like someone that's broken. What she's actually saying is, you know me, I like a project. I like to be in control, and I don't like to be the vulnerable one in a relationship. Is that what you're saying?
The message she's sending is, I'm not broken. I'm not damaged, but these people are. So I'm going to go to work repairing them. It's a type of projection. I'm going to go to work, repairing their damage so that I don't have to look at my own damage.
You know, it might be a project, also might be a challenge, right? Because we also learned that Jared was not interested in her. We've learned this from several people, including missionary companions. She wrote the mission mother after she returned home from her mission in Spain. She wrote and she kept in touch with the mission president and the mission mother, as they refer to this woman, and her companions, and stated she had the worst date ever. This guy essentially was not into her at all. And then that ends up being Jared, who then she aggressively pursued. We've heard this from several sources. Could this also be someone that's broken, also a challenge? You know, I'm, watch me, you know, here I go.
Yeah, there's a, again, I think that speaks to control. There's sort of a manipulative element here that she's going to take these people. I think she sees these relationships as puppets. Mm-hmm. You know, they're marionettes that she's going to control, and she's going to pull the levers and the strings, and people don't reject her. So, but I don't think that's the case here. Maybe, you know, the thing about this jail relationship that's interesting, and I mean, I don't know how much of a relationship you can have in jail, by the way, but depends probably on where she's you know, the location of the jail, but there's something potentially very oppositional about that. You know, if as you point out, if there's pronouns involved here, you know, that's antithetical to anything that her family would condone. That's right. That's antithetical to her family's extremely Mormon, right? They're very, very immersed in the Mormon church. And even if she's not, like, she knows that they are.
They're very conservative, right? Very conservative. Right.
And so by getting in a relationship with someone who may or not be transgender, you know, she's sending a message to her family that she's lashing out. She's rebelling here. That's one of her qualities, right? She did that with Mario.
Yeah.
You know, Mario was certainly someone that her family had a very difficult time with Mario initially.
Well, she left the LDS church after her divorce from Jared. She then got multiple tattoos, which these things might seem very normal to people, but they are not normal to her very conservative LDS family from a small town who owns a crafting company. This is all a bit of rebellion, right? So dating someone that may be transgender and had gender reassignment surgery could also, is that what you're saying?
Right. Yeah, exactly. That there's this quality, you know, we know from talking to people that knew the family that they described Shanna as being the black sheep of the family, that when they had stamping up meetings, she was never brought on stage. She was always in the background, you know, in many ways she felt sort of hidden from view. And
yeah.
She felt like a bit of an outsider and a misfit. And so I think you have this rebellious quality here that's, you know, sticking it to her family in a way. Like she did that with Mario, and here she seems to be doing it in jail in this relationship. She knows they're not going to approve of this.
Right.
But she doesn't care.
I know. She's writing her sister Sage about it. Yeah. She's not keeping this a secret, in other words. She is not hiding her newfound love behind bars with her family. She is making it known.
Right. So I think you've got this constant, she's constantly pushing up against the limits and seeing what she can get away with. And she's saying, you know, part of this is saying to her family, look, I'm going to test you and see if you're still going to love me. Right. She did that with Mario. She did it with Jared to some degree. That there, not only is she controlling, but she's also there's this attention seeking quality where she wants to push up against the limits or transgress the limits and see if people are willing to tolerate it. See if her family going to accept this? Are they going to reject her? Right? She wants to know. She's the message she's constantly sending. I think the underlying message she's sending is, will you love me?
Yeah.
If I push you and I challenge you and I push you over the edge, will you be there for me? Will you continue to pay for my defense? Will you still love me? Because, I mean, underneath it all, I think another message here is she didn't feel loved enough. And so there's no limits to how far she can push her family to see if they'll reject her.
Or love her.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. That if they're not rejecting her, then she perceives that as love. And so this is one way she gets love or narcissistic supply.
And money is very much a narcissistic supply in this family, or to use your word, because money is very much how, I should say, love is shown. And by spending millions and millions of dollars on the best defense attorney in the country, I guess they are letting her know.
And I think she knows, by the way, that she knows they're not going to reject her. So she knows that she can push the limits as far as she wants. And she'll get away with it. And that's the sense of entitlement. You know, one of the things that the mission commandants told us was she just took charge of everything, and she flaunted her money and she flaunted her wealth and she flaunted this privilege and she did whatever she wanted to quote one of the mission commandants, she just took charge of everything. There was never any asking, unquote. Right. That's sort of what she's doing in jail. I mean, for most people, Jia would pose constraints, but apparently for her, it doesn't. She can engage in any relationship she wants. She can have contraband. She can, you know, she can access whatever she wants in jail because she's entitled and wealthy, and she is going to push the limits.
So, last question then. What do you make of this Henry Tenen mystery? It really is a mystery. We don't know whether or not he gave an entire false testimony, or if he just, we don't know why he said false testimony and what he means by that. But it's certainly sort of overwhelming to me. Especially, I'll be honest, after the Richard Allen trial and seeing that and seeing how people tried to say his confessions weren't real. It's like a little bit of deja vu.
They have eyewitnesses that identified the truck in the vicinity.
Oh yeah. No. And that was Henry Tenen's truck. But what if he's saying testimony about Mario being a murderer or Shannon? Yeah, okay. That's what I'm stressed about. What if he says, yeah, that was, you know, he's
right.
He's the hitman, but he also, I know he, the day before Mario was arrested, he testified.
They still have a case. It follow the money.
Follow the money. That's true.
They still have a case. It's not, it, even if he retracts or recants it, that I don't, I mean, it's going to damage their case, of course, because, but I, you know, first of all, he's not the strongest witness on the planet. He's a career criminal. So, I mean, he's not going to be the best witness. I think they have receipts. They have other receipts. They have, you know, follow the money. They have tax. There's other things going on here that will allow them to put on their case.
Yeah. The biggest receipt, in my opinion, right now, and we learned this, you know, with all the hearings that Jose Baez was demanding because he wanted to know, he wanted the state and the prosecution to show their hand. But Mario Fernandez had full access to Shanna Gardner's trust, something that I know from multiple sources has never happened in Gardner family history. No, they have many daughters, and no son-in-law, no husband of these daughters has ever had full access to Shanna Gardner's trust. But Mario Fernandez did. And checks from Mario and, you know, from Shanna's bank account and $5,000 increments. You're right. Follow the money.
Follow the money and look at, there's plenty of other receipts, text messages, emails. Like there's, I think there's other facets of this case that will allow them to corroborate Mario's involvement. So, I mean, of course they want Henry's testimony, and I don't know enough about it, like the details. Yeah.
Could be a nothing burger, right? Could be a nothing
burger.
Yeah,
it might be. I mean, you have Jose Baez is, you know, he's going to go after every little minuscule error he's going to take things out of context. He's a good defense attorney, but he's.
Yeah. Well, in this case, it's Mario's attorney, but who knows where Jose is, you know, fitting in his agenda too.
Right.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll wait and see. We'll wait and see. There was one more thing I was going to mention. You reminded me of this. Follow the money. Oh, follow the money. And then follow the tattoo artist's testimony too, who gave the tip to police that Shanna was asking him, do you know of anyone that can take care of Jared? Shocked this tattoo artist so much that he gave this tip to police. Yeah.
Well, you're right. There's a lot of evidence here.
But who knows?
You know, you've got a really savvy defense attorney who's one of the best, and he's a shark. So I don't know. But I mean, I'd have to think that it seems like they have a fairly strong case right now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Babe, for jumping on. Yep. By the way, I like your hat. Reminds me that I should put a link to some of our merchandise. This episode, we don't do very good promoting our merchandise. You're wearing the Hidden True Crime hat. And so I'll put a link to that in the description of this episode as well. So
yeah, this was a birthday present that you you got for me. So I love it. Yeah, thank you. I love this hat.
You're welcome. I know you well. I thought what he wants is a hat with hidden.
A hat to jump on a show at the last minute.
Because you just got back from playing basketball with our son.
Yeah.
So thank you for taking it.
Right.
Today.
On a bad hair day.
Well, it looks good. Thanks, babe.
Okay. All right.
All right. We'll see you.
Okay. Bye.